They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me today on the Commons, I have John Sellers. John is in Arizona. And he's become very, very active in all things HOA. I think the first email I got from him, he said he owns 4 units in an HOA for self-protection.
No, three separate subdivisions, actually. So we have 3 different, very radically different experiences at work.
Okay, so he's checking these out. But he's got all kinds of other stuff going for us. John, thank you so much for making time to join us today on the Commons.
My pleasure.
Really excited to have you on. I know you've got a whole lot of experiences in Arizona. So why don't we get started?
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about your background. Tell us what you think.
I'm an engineer by background, but I spent basically 30 years on Wall Street when it was what I considered to be an honest industry. And being associated from a distance with some of the things like Enron, eventually gave up on the banking business and sort of semi-retired, moved back to the States with my wife for personal reasons, and got involved in local politics in California, and then moved to Arizona and continued that, but also started getting affected very badly by some of the silly things that were going on in a subdivision in Prescott, Arizona that we used to live in. And that's where the onion peeling started as far as what was really going on with homeowners associations. I should add that I also have a business with some old financial partners of mine, which is trying to put together public-private partnership for private infrastructure. And what we do there is end up doing a lot of due diligence and research at all levels of government. So we probably know the way the public record system and the nuances work better than, frankly, a lot of government officials.
That's not surprising. I don't think they know much of anything.
No, I actually consider the public record system in this country to be one of the great intellectual assets of it, but it's much maligned. And as I said, we found a way to use it. And so once you transpose into the homeowners association industry, which is, after all, just a subsidiary form of government, that reliance and insistence on transparency just moves over. And there you find in homeowners associations that, you know, transparency really is in name only, that there's little transparency despite what the legislators have been, you know, quite properly trying to do.
Well, there's little transparency.
That's my background and my context, and we ourselves have been very badly affected by some of this stuff because we ended up making our last. We've lived all over the world with my profession, and our move to Prescott was meant to be our last. But frankly, the conditions there became so bad that we ended up keeping the house, renting it, and moving down to into Scottsdale, where we actually live in a wonderful, wonderful community. And my wife is also a president of the subdivision where we have an investment property. It's one of the largest master plan communities in Arizona. And that's an extremely well-run, transparent organization. So we've got 2 examples of where it, you know, works really well, and one poster child of our own where the behavior has been absolutely appalling. And that's the one that uncovered, you know, when I started doing the onion peeling, which has led us to where we are at the moment.
So so you say that you have one that's really good, and then you have the problem one. What are the odds of the one that's really good remaining really, really good forever?
Well, that's a very good question, because if you take the three of them, my wife was actually president of the one with an investment property, and we had an almost close call where the board was changing around a bit, and my wife had to do some very quick corrective action. I think the chances of things going bad in the one we live in are pretty slim, but you never know. I mean, a different group of people come in, or, you know, people move, and at the end of the day, it's all about, in my view, the ability and willingness of the boards to do what boards are supposed to do, whether you're Exxon or a homeowners association, which is the act in the interest of your shareholders. So I think it's a fragile relationship sometimes. You mustn't take it for granted.
Yeah, I think the point of my question is to make sure that the listeners realize you can't take it for granted. You can't go in and say, oh, this is working just fine. Nothing terrible is going to happen.
I think it's significantly improved when, particularly with the development that's taken place out in the high growth state. I think if you have a good developer, and we do have a very good developer in both of the good subdivisions, they turn up to meetings on a regular basis, even though they don't have to. You know, any situation starts, it means to go on. So if you start off well, a lot easier to keep going rather than, you know, having a bad start where the transition from developer control to homeowners is very badly managed, because the pattern of behavior just builds up problems that inevitably people try and cover up.
You'll find an older association that's been around forever, so the developer is gone, and things may have been running smoothly for a long time, but I think due to all the enabling statutes and due to the industry, the HOA industry, that has a huge interest in getting into your pockets and the bottom of your bank account, things have turned around so badly. If you're going to buy into something like this, you really have to know what you're getting into.
Well, I think that gets into the macro level, and what you're getting to is the money issues, and being a banker, I understand that. The rough numbers that I've come up with, and there's people with similar numbers and some with others, but it seems to us that probably at the national level, there's maybe something close to $50 billion sloshing around in homeowners associations.
Oh, it's more than that. The last I looked, it was $70 billion, and that's an old figure. It's a lot of money.
Well, 50 or 70, I mean, either way, even in today's world where trillions seem to be the numbers that matter, that they're significant enough that the, you know, honey attracts bees, and the people around that know it are the management companies.
Yes.
And the attorney firms that present themselves as so-called expert HOA attorneys, and it's a pot of gold.
Yeah.
And that, I fundamentally think, is where the issue lies. My perspective, and I've been involved in corporate fraud at a fairly high level. I certainly was, you know, we were one of the first banks when I was working in Paris to have literally spotted what Enron was up to. So I kind of like to think I can see the big picture. What I've seen going on in homeowners associations, both at the state level, and I assume it's repeated across the country, is every bit as bad as healthcare fraud, which is pervasive. And, of course, anybody that's in Arizona is well aware of the Keating savings and loan scandal here in Arizona, which, you know, featured the Keating Five, John McCain. And it's exactly the same. I mean, there are good ideas that get translated into bad actions by some very, maybe not a lot of people, but some bad actors. And that's exactly what's going on here.
You discovered in your capacity as a banker and someone who's able to look beyond all of the stuff that the rest of us would miss, you managed to discover some stuff that was going on with a couple of HOA banks in Arizona?
Yes, indeed. In fact, I don't want to dwell on detail, but I found a smaller case, and then once I looked around, found the bigger case. This all happened because of the dispute I was having with the board up in Prescott, and they had a management company that I think we certainly uncovered some things about them that were very inappropriate, shall we say, plus an HOA attorney's firm that were tapping into the resources. And I discovered that the association changed its bank account to a bank called Desert Foothills Bank, which has got a big had a big operation in Prescott and also down in the valley. And it turned out that none of the board members even knew who this bank was. The management company had changed the accounts over. They were the only ones that had signing authorities. Even the board members didn't. And this bank had been substituted for another local bank. Well, at that time, in Arizona, the Corporations Commission, which receives the reports of the corporations, they insisted upon a summary balance sheet of each of the nonprofits that were registered with them, the homeowners association. So with a bit of clicking and cutting and pasting, I figured out that all the associations for which the management company was the statutory agent, they'd all moved their monies, totaling about $6 million, to this particular bank. And lots of amounts of balances were in excess of the FDIC deposit arrangements. We also discovered that, coincidentally, the owner of the development of the management company was taking out deeds of trust for property speculation of, would you believe, the same $6 million. And so that pattern became evident of, you know, management companies harvesting on a wholesale level deposits because the board members aren't paying attention or don't even know. And then the money goes into a bank, and in fact, Desert Hills, I've had some experience of working with bankruptcies in Texas. That particular bank was so badly run. I mean, I couldn't have lost as much money as they did without giving $500,000 cash away to every single depositor. It was just amazing. And they were eventually bailed out, but in the meantime, I suddenly discovered there was a far bigger case, which is actually the National Bank of Arizona, which is technically a Las Vegas holding company, and they did have an operation in Las Vegas, but it was largely a bank that was active in Arizona, and it was a bank with roughly $3 billion deposits, as opposed to Desert Hills, which had about $200 or $300, I think. But what was amazing was they had a division called CAB, which was not a subsidiary, but it was a division of the bank. It was called Community Association Bank Shares. Now, this organization had done what Desert Hills had done, but on a far grander scale, and were quite proud to advertise that they'd attracted over $1 billion of deposits over a very, very short space of time. I think it was roughly 18 months. And clearly what they'd done is they'd harvested the management companies, and it was the easiest way of gathering deposits. They also advertised the fact that, you know, they invested $75 million back into Homeowners Association, which I took as a sign that there was a gap somewhere, that money was going elsewhere. But the most remarkable thing was that the president of the bank was a guy called Craig Huntington, who I'm pretty sure is still active in a banking capacity in Arizona. His only credentials for being president of the bank were that he'd run two Las Vegas nightclubs, and he was a member of the CAI. And
surprise, surprise, huh?
Yeah. Now, what was even more surprising was that, not surprising really, because, you know, the trauma of 2008 with the financial crisis, the odd $1 billion here was kind of getting lost in the mix. And what happened was Indy Mac, the bank in California, went belly up, and in the shadow of that, First National Bank of Arizona went belly up. But what was really interesting was, and maybe somebody that's in the financial world has seen one and I missed it, but I've never seen the FDIC bail out uninsured deposits. But in this case, they did, and it cost the taxpayer. The FDIC put in $862 million.
Wow.
National Mutual of Omaha stepped in and basically acquired it, but not before the Feds had put in this $862 million, which obviously bailed out the uninsured depositors as well, many of whom, I'm sure, just like the situation in Prescott, were putting monies with this bank that were just ignoring the $100,000 FDIC limit. Now, I can't prove this, but I sort of have a feel for the way things in Washington work in crises, and I have to assume that there was some political interaction at a very senior level in Arizona, which had a Democratic governor at the time with the Obama administration, that said, look, we can't afford to let this bank go because 40% of Arizonans live in homeowners associations, and if we don't bail out the uninsured depositors, we're going to have a catastrophe on our hands. And I don't personally qualify with the judgment there, but what I do have a real problem with is the lack of accountability for what went on. And I've yet to find, I've testified at hearings in Phoenix and asked this question before large committees with senators and representatives, and they start gazing at the ceiling, is my feeling, that they just don't want to go near this. And nobody's ever answered the question, you know, how this was allowed to happen, what were the circumstances behind it, and whether anybody is held accountable.
John, any idea who owns the banks, these banks?
Yeah, there was a, I don't want to get into the names of those because I'm not sure that it's very difficult to get the names of shareholders, but there were certainly some colorful personalities associated with it. And there were some respectable people as well. One of whom, and I won't mention his name, is a well-known figure in the Phoenix area, somebody I have a high regard for, and he's remained with the organization. But, you know, I'm a bit cynical about banks. The shareholders are usually the last ones to find out anyway. It's usually the management, if it's not acting as it should be, that's really benefiting, and I'm sure that was the case here. Plus, one of the problems is with banks is that despite living in a free freedom of information society, when you there's good reasons for this. When the FDIC intervenes to save a bank, it becomes a black box from a transparency standpoint. There's almost nothing short of the Attorney General of the state getting involved and saying, I want to see everything, that allows somebody to do records requests and find out what happened. But either way, that cost the taxpayer $862 million. The same number for Desert Hills was $106 million. And we don't know why and how that all was allowed to happen.
I don't know, but there have been other banks associated with the Community Associations Institute where CAI has said, you've got to go and put all your money in these banks. And management companies have just taken money out of homeowner association, closed down accounts, and then moved them to these banks that were being held or owned or managed, or somehow CAI was involved. And in a number of them, there was one particular person who owned them. And they managed to, if memory serves me correctly, a lot of them went belly up. They did not survive. There were all kinds of questions about the management of this. I was not aware that the FDIC had actually bailed out a couple of banks in Arizona.
Well, I'm sure that this pattern is not unique.
No, that's what I'm getting at. I mean, you know, what else is going on across the country? There's one in Georgia, in my association a number of years ago. We didn't know anything about it. I mean, the board never paid attention. That's the problem, John. You get people, as they may be well-intentioned and they may be as honest as the day is long, but they really don't know anything and they really don't understand what they're doing. And so the management company comes in and says, oh, don't worry about a thing. We'll take care of it. The HOA attorneys come in. Don't worry about a thing. You just make sure that you enforce every covenant, every rule, every whatever, and of course let us know and we'll help you at a fee, of course. And then,
well, I can say that the way it works in the situation that my wife is president of, and I've actually been in the meeting, she asked me to give a presentation on transparency to the board, and the management company, First Reserve or First Residential, it's a company that's larger than just Arizona, you could see they took offense at this.
Yeah.
And my wife just had to turn around to them and say, excuse me, you work for us.
Yes.
And I also said to the lady in question, I said, well, you do realize that there's a bar association opinion on the unauthorized practice of law, and you just gave a legal opinion. But my wife's pretty feisty.
But you see, we need more people like her, John. We need more people like her, because I've seen board members just roll over. I mean, and management companies oversee elections. They want to make sure they get the milquetoast people out there who don't know what they're doing because they're easier to manipulate.
Well, and one of the keys here is that it's easy for board members to kind of say, well, don't worry, because they've got these, they all have the, you know, directors and officers liability insurance. And I've focused on that, and I know who the insurers and the pool of insurers are that are members of CAI in Arizona. And I don't put those insurers in the same category as the Farmers and the Aetnas and the big casualty insurers. In fact, my sense is there's a big rift going on between them. I know of a number of lawsuits. There was a big fire in Sedona a number of years ago, for instance, which burnt up a lot of very expensive houses. And it was the fault of the management company that was using chainsaws in the wrong time of the season. Well, there was a big lawsuit, and it ended up with Farmers, the big insurance company, up against the homeowners association attorneys representing the management company with their insurers. But it intellectually, it wasn't the battle of equals, because the big insurers, the Farmers of the world and the State Farms, clearly they're paying the freight ultimately, because you know they've already paid out the insurance losses. The same goes with the real estate industry. We have a realtor in Arizona here who's been very active about what's going on here, and what we've concluded is that basically, because of the lack of disclosure that takes place, you know, when you buy a house, there's disclosure issues that go with the house, but there's also disclosure issues that go with the other part of your investment, which is the subdivision. And the disclosure that's coming from these management companies is practically non-existent. Well, in effect, what that means is that the insurers for the realtors, and not all realtors are honest, and not every realtor is dishonest, of course, but either way, the insurers for the realtors are subsidizing the lack of disclosure on the part of the management company.
I think they're all in bed with each other. You've got a realtor who goes out, and I was a real estate agent a long time ago. You go out and you sell the property, or you've got a listing and you want to sell the property because it's costing you money to have it sit there. So you're going to push it. You're going to do everything you can. But I think beyond that, John, there's a complete lack of understanding on the part of the housing consumers. They either turn a blind eye towards it or they're very, very gullible. Because when I was selling real estate, I said, look, I'm not allowed to steer you anywhere, but here are my views on homeowner associations. So please ask me to limit my search to non-HOA property. They said, oh, no, it's okay. We know what HOAs can be like, but you know what? They protect property values. Well, no, they don't. So, you know, people...
Well, my question is always how many of those buyers that seem to want to be steered towards HOAs without protective issue and
You're kind of disappearing a little bit. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, I just wonder how many of those homeowners in that circumstance might take the time to go and speak to the board president to figure out whether it's a group of people they do want to be associated with.
Yeah, but you know what? The next election comes along, those people are gone, and you have no idea who's going to come in.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's not. There's nothing permanent about that. That's the whole point. There's nothing permanent. You can go and do your due diligence, and you can go and interview people, and you can talk to them. And if they allow you to, you can attend a meeting and see how many of the homeowners, A, show up, B, whether they're even allowed to participate in the meeting, how they're treated. But again, there's nothing permanent about that, because all of that is subject to change. Very, very quickly.
Well, in fact, in the power of that in local government, particularly at the municipal level, is the manipulation and the games that go on between the elected officials.
Yes.
Who are often manipulated by the appointed official staff. We actually call that the KGB versus the Kremlin issue.
Say that again. You're again disappearing.
We call it the KGB versus the Kremlin issue.
The Kremlin issue, okay.
You know, the Kremlin may go away from time to time, but the KGB stays in place, and, you know, it's not unusual to hear a city manager say, well, look, you know, we've just got another few years of this council, and they'll be gone. So that combined with general voter apathy is part of the core of the problem. I don't think you can fix voter apathy. But one thing I do believe you can do is you can bring sensible regulation to the industry, recognizing that there are some political parties for whom the word regulation is an anathema. And you certainly can renew the fight at the level of transparency. And that's been my focus, is to think about the types of legislative change and how to reinforce the transparency so that at least you can find out what's going on. But in so many cases I see, it's not just the case of people's daily lives being destroyed, although in some cases it is, but the homeowners association is a complete black box. People can't even get basic financial statements as to what's going on.
Yeah, you've got a blog. I want to move into that. And you're trying to find out what's going on. You're trying to sort of provide some forum where that transparency can maybe become a little more obvious. Is that correct?
Yeah. It has a number of goals, not all of which I've completely crystallized for people to understand them. But, we are in a new world where you can, you know, run things like this from your iPhone.
You're disappearing again.
Okay, it's a blog called www.arizonahoa.blogspot.com. And basically what I'm doing with it is using it firstly as a repository of interesting facts for people, you know, so that they can, you know, learn about why management companies can't give legal opinions. They can learn about the various mechanisms and things we have in place in Arizona for dispute resolution. But also my goal is to use it to develop an audience of people that we can take to the legislators and say, look, this is the universe of problems we've identified, and make sure that we've got those people somehow connected to the blog so that they can have at their disposal the names and addresses and emails of politicians, so that even though they may not want to register a view and, you know, blog to their heart's content, at the appropriate level, they might get interested in writing an email to a senator. So one of the things I've done is, and this is very mechanical, is that I'm building a series of databases, which started with the contact details, all public information, of every single one of the 100 people that have been through we have a process here called the Office of Administrative Hearings, and contacting them and making them aware that they're not an isolated case. We've got an exercise underway with the Superior Courts in Arizona, and they're being quite responsive to go back 5 years.
Okay, you're disappearing again.
Okay. Give us the details of all the cases that have been through the Superior Court with the so-called HOA attorneys. And my hope is that as one goal of the blog, we can not just educate, but we can get these people to wake up and realize that they're part of a pattern. And some of the feedback I'm already getting is remarkable. It's just amazing. There have been... I know there have been, with one part of the Superior Court, almost 700 cases in Superior Court involving the HOA attorneys. I think that number statewide is about 3,000. And so if you think about that, and nobody seems to be able to go into court for less than $10,000 or $15,000, think of the financial damage.
Yes.
The revenues that the attorney is generating. But also the strain on the superior courts, the court system.
Yes, the courts don't want to deal with these. And so there's a big push to move them over into ADR.
Yes, absolutely. But on the positive side, some of these homeowners, we had one case of intimidation, which is quite a common practice here.
Yes.
A lady who just happened to live in a multi-million-dollar condominium but has apartments all over the world, and they tried those tactics on her, and she came back with a very solid response with good attorneys. And this is one lady who's already come up with the idea of putting together a non-profit to raise money so that we could put that organization to work defending the interests of homeowners rather than homeowners association. So people are mobilizing around the blog, and it hasn't gone viral yet, but I've got some plans in mind to use the 5,000 email contacts we already have to wake people up, and if we can wake up the audience of homeowners in the process, so much the better.
Yeah, we'll put that. I'll have that on my promo. I'll have a link to your blog. I know that it's just starting. I went in and I did check it out, and I did see the list of 111 people who had been through the OAH, the Office of Administrative Hearing, and that's sort of a form of ADR in Arizona, right? It's provided...
Yes, but it's actually, there's different ways of ADR, as you know, but in Arizona, like a number of states, there's a system of administrative judges which are part of the executive branch, and they handle disputes in a supposedly cost-effective manner. But here's the rub. There's 111 cases since 2007. I believe the same number for Superior Court, for people that didn't even know about this or were forced into the Superior Court by being sued by the homeowners associations. I think the total number of cases is about 3,000. So the 111 is just the tip of the iceberg.
I guess my question, John, is you said you were going to contact them and let them know they're not alone. Have you contacted any of them?
Yeah, I don't have the data. I'm working with the Superior Courts to come up with the database download to get the public names and addresses of all the cases in Superior Court. Again, I think that's about 3,000. So far what I've done is just written with a mass mail merge to all of the 111 people that have been before the OEH, and I would say that probably one in three of them has responded back in some form or fashion with some amazing story. But
so what kind of responses are you getting? And the reason I'm asking you this is I'm wondering if things have changed any, because when I started in all of this HOA stuff back almost 30 years ago, we also, back then, we didn't have the internet. We just didn't email and none of that. And we started a grassroots organization here in Northern Virginia, but it had members from the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., and Maryland. But the only way we could reach them was to read the papers and then try to find out who they were, go through phone books and find them. We had one member who decided he was going to try to increase our numbers by going to court and doing some research in Maryland and finding a lot of the people who had been to court, had been sued or had sued their HOA. And when he contacted them, they were very, very angry because they were ashamed and embarrassed. They thought that they had done something wrong, and they didn't want their friends and family to know. So they were not inclined to get involved or tell their story or do anything. They just wanted to move on, almost like a rape victim, you know?
No, I perfectly understand that, and I think, you know, I've had emails from people asking my advice, and I've had to say to them, look, I only you can judge your personal circumstances for pain and strife. I wouldn't ever want to do that. So you're absolutely right. There's a lot of people that have just given up, or maybe they're now 10 years older than they were, you know, when the trouble happens. So I fully recognize that. But, you know, you don't need that many of that universe. I mean, if we could get 10% of the people that have been through this terrible process to just at least get on the blog and look for the... One of the things we have on there is the email address and name and details of over 500 elected representatives, be they state, senators, representatives, or local government officials. When we get to the point, as I hope we will, of a couple of state representatives who want to go and fight this good fight, we can help them by arming them with some of the people that at least are out there with emails and send an email and say, go for it. And then the politicians can use that as ammunition. I actually was part. One of the amazing things I discovered, I tried to get water into a neighborhood I was living in, California. We had an amazing group of over 1,500 residents, and I had the email addresses of all of them. And most of them were on fixed incomes, and many were elderly. I totally underestimated the extent to which elderly people actually do go on the Internet. And when needed, of the silent majority, they will respond. And well, so my hope is that we can translate that to some action here.
Well, I think the reason I asked the question is back in those days, like I said, we didn't have the Internet. We didn't have as much ability to communicate and to get our points across. I mean, this is a whole new world, and it's happened very, very quickly. But back 30 years ago, we didn't have access to information like we have now. So these people didn't realize that they were not alone. These people did not know that there were so many other people just like them out there who had been through the
Absolutely.
Same thing.
And it's amazing that the patterns that emerge are sort of amusing at some level. I'll give you one example. There's a major lawsuit going on over a pickleball court that the board decided to put in the subdivision not far from me. $1 million investment that the board did without any approval from the members. That pattern's repeated throughout Arizona. The number of disputes that are involved in, you know, pickleball courts is amazing. So there's a lot of commonality between what's going on here, and people think they're in a, you know, isolated. And of course, what that means is, honest people tend to believe what people tell them.
Yes.
It's like you see a pattern that they get reinforced. And the management companies and the attorneys, you know, they're coordinated. My feeling is, you know, it's a bit like, I was joking. I don't mean this literally, but I said basically the way we have to think about this is, you know, the management companies and the CAI is a big global super tanker. We're going to be a bunch of Somali pirates with hopefully some coordination. But on a serious note, I also used to work in suicide prevention in the UK, and I just do not like getting emails from elderly people who are talking, as I got one the other day, about the box of pills in front of them. I mean, that's the kind of feedback I'm getting.
I had a young woman scheduled to come on the show, and as I did with you, I usually call my guests, and I may have you booked for a while. So I call you and sort of confirm that you'll be on, and I couldn't reach her, so I called and called cell phone in the house and sent emails, and I just didn't get anything back. So the night before, I had not heard back from her. So I got someone else the night before and came in, did the show, went back home, and there were all these emails from people with her name in the subject line of the email. It turned out that she had gotten so frustrated. Now, this is a young mother of two children, so fed up with being beaten up and abused by the HOA that she actually did try to commit suicide. She ended up in the hospital. She's okay, and I hear from her all the time. She's okay now. But can you imagine the abuse and the harassment that goes on, that a young mother who adores her kids would actually find it preferable to commit suicide?
Oh, I'm sorry to say I can. And the other thing that strikes me is, you know, my wife and I are also big brothers and sisters, vetted by the FBI. In our OEH case, the attorneys and the board came up with an affidavit testifying to the fact that we've been abusing their children.
What?
But and then the other thing, which is a more general observation I find difficult to deal with, is that the propensity of people that would otherwise look as if they're honest, upstanding people.
Yes.
To lie.
Yes.
Is absolutely amazing.
Yes. I so totally agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. It just fascinates me. I get people say, oh, I would never do a thing like that. And then you find out someone calls you up and they've got this absolutely horrendous story to tell. And you go, who's the attorney? Who's the management company? It's this person who says, I would never do anything like that. Wait a minute. What happened?
Well, I think there's a group think mentality that gets into these boards, and some of them may be respectable people, but you know, they kind of convince themselves it's okay to lie because, well, they've convinced themselves collectively that the other person's a bad person, so we'll make an exception in this case. But you know, one other last observation I'll make is that things are changing. I mean, I don't care what, you know, whether you vote for whoever you vote for in the presidential election, but whether it's Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump, that people's tolerance level, partly because of the internet, I suspect, for this kind of nonsense at all levels of governments is really wearing thin.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's exciting. I think it's exciting that people are finally standing up and saying, we're just not going to put up with the status quo anymore. There's no difference between either party.
Yep.
There's no difference between either party. Except that in Bernie Sanders' case, he's not going to be allowed to run because the party elders have decided that he can't run. They don't want him. He's not their favorite son. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens there. But no, I absolutely agree with you.
Your friend, by the way, who went down to the courthouse, the modern-day equivalent of this, I just got a letter. We have three superior court groupings in Arizona, Maricopa County, which is Phoenix, Pima County, which is Tucson, and then the rest of the state. I got a letter yesterday from a public records request I made to Pima County, where they've... for $790, offered to give me a complete download. It'll probably be a gigabyte of data that can be then used as a surrogate for what your friend had to do by going down and checking files. And just think about that. That would, if I can get that, and I think I can, it'll work for the rest of the state. So we'll have a database with names and addresses, contacts for attorneys, be able to figure out which of those cases are applicable to the 55 or 60 attorneys as part of the HOA attorneys group in Arizona, and we can, in many cases, we can immediately email them because their email contacts are part of that database.
That would be absolutely incredible. Some states actually have all that stuff online, and some don't.
Yeah, they absolutely do. In fact, and one of the things that's amazing is that the court system as a public agency, they have a different set of rules governing how they release records, but they have extremely good technology. You know, every case in Arizona is filed on an electronic basis so that the attorneys have their own numbers, and so it feeds into a database, and I know how to massage large databases, so... and that's one of my major goals in the next couple of weeks is to get that information because that's when we somehow get access to the 30 times more number of people that we've been able to trace down that have been through the OEH. And they're the ones that have suffered badly. I mean, it's one thing to go before the Office of Administrative Hearings where there are no attorney's fees because it's an administrative law process, but it's another to be on either side of a lawsuit where you could lose and you could get stuck with a large amount of legal expenses.
Yeah. There's, by the way, before we move off, there's a woman, Beanie Adolph, in Harris County, in Houston, Harris County, Texas, who actually put together a website. I think it's hoadata.org. And that's exactly what she did for a while. She got all the cases from the HOA cases. And she had them listed based on associations and the attorneys representing the associations and the outcome.
Ah.
So, yeah, if you go to, I think it's hoadata.org.
Well, there's no such thing as an original idea, but she didn't do it.
it was something that was started, and she took it over and did it. And so, anyway, it's available, it's there, but it's, I think, really outdated because it's an older website, but it's interesting to go in and see what happens, and what you find out is it's always the same attorneys. There was a while, John, when people would call me up and they'd say, you know, this is the problem I'm having. Or they'd send me an email, and I'd go, where are you? And the minute they told me what city and what state they were in, I knew exactly who the attorney for the HOA was. I go,
the case here. And by the way, they all advertise themselves as HOA attorneys. Well, the Bar Association has a listing of specialties of law. It's quite a long list, actually, but there's no such defined specialty being HOA law. It just doesn't exist, but it is a marketing tool for them. They present themselves as the paragons of expertise, and people fall for it. And they're very poor attorneys. One of the other interesting...
I'm glad you said that.
That's the thing. One of them... There is some amusement in life. one of the common denominators of some of the feedback I've had, and I've had experience with this, is that you can be fighting over a particular set of documents, and completely inadvertently, because they pushed the wrong button on the computer, they provide it to you. And in fact, one lady emailed me yesterday, and she said, look, my attorney, I found this, and I gave it to my attorney. He couldn't believe it. He said, this is the smoking gun. Well, I could show you 8 or 9 different examples where the sheer stupidity of what's going on the other side, they're not even the Keystone Cops in most cases.
I've been in court, and I've said this, I've told this story on this show a number of times, but I've actually been to court just to watch and to support some of the homeowners if they let me know and it's in the local area and I'm not already booked doing something else. And one attorney stood there and said, Your Honor, and she's talking about the declaration, you know, when the argument was that it's not, they don't have the authority to do this, they're acting ultra vires because it's not actually something that they are allowed to do in their declaration. And the attorney said, but Your Honor, this is a living document. We don't have to stick to it. It's a suggestion. It's an idea. I thought the judge was going to fly over the bench and go at her throat. There would have been a real cat fight in the courtroom had that happened. She said, I beg your pardon. The judge was absolutely horrified. So, no, you're right. They're not very good. They're not very good. And some of them are pretty horrible, which is always a good thing for the homeowners, assuming they can
get
a good...
Well, and the other thing is, this is a data world. The other thing is that they're all, when you get their communications, they all have on the bottom that, you know, this firm is registered as a debt collector.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know any decent attorney that actually would advertise that. But what's also interesting is, and this is part of fitting the puzzle together, is that, you know, there is a system I've subscribed to for years called PACER, where you can access every single document and filing on PDFs within days across the whole country. Well, the debt collector remedies for these firms is federal. So you don't find these records in the superior courts or anywhere else. And so with a quick look at PACER, I was able, I didn't scan the whole universe of attorneys, but guess what? There's a number of very big federal cases that have been brought against these same firms for infringing federal debt regulations.
I have a number of them on my website, a number of the attorneys who have violated the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act. In fact, I was on a show with one of them, and CAI was trying to get, and they still are, they're still working at the federal level to exempt HOA attorneys from having to comply with the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And I asked this collector, I said, so what is it that you don't like about it? I said, it makes it difficult for me to do my job. I said, okay. I said, what about it makes it difficult? It says here you're not allowed to lie. Is that difficult? No. You're not allowed to harass people. Does that make it difficult for you to do? I mean, I went through everything that they're not supposed to do. And when I said, all right, so what is it that you can't do? I mean, why is it that you want to be exempted? You want to be able to lie and cheat and harass people? Oh, no, not I. oh, I have no problem with the FDCPA. I said, oh, okay. So have you told CAI that they represent you? Well, no. I said, did they ask you? No. You know, I don't understand these people. I don't get these people.
Well, they're getting away with it because they can.
And so we should not allow them to do it. We should absolutely not allow them to do it. Just call them on it all the time. But no, a lot of those FDCPA cases where the homeowners won, and I don't know of any where the homeowners lost, are on my website if you need to access them. Some of the older ones, too.
Well, the other thing we have going in Arizona, and I've yet to get any sign of movement because I've not really tried, but we have two organizations. One's nationwide and one's just very much Arizona focused. You have, of course, the ACLU, which certainly in Arizona has shown a real determination to go after local government corruption with a major case involving constitutional infringements of rights. And then we also have the Goldwater Institute, which it's not many people think of it as a right-wing organization, but it's been very powerful to fight the good fight for people that don't have the resources to do it at all levels, and they'll take on big and small cases. And at some level, I think there's nothing like making an example of somebody to inspire the troops, particularly if they're CIA members. I think that might be one element of the working in the trenches that's going to need to happen, and that would sure pass the message.
I've actually had someone, Nick Dranis, I think, from the Goldwater Institute. He was on a number of years ago. He had written something. I need to go back into the Goldwater Institute and see what they have. The ACLU, the ones I've dealt with, because I worked with some of them over here and I tried to get them involved in HOA cases, they're very much, no, it's just strictly government and strictly First Amendment. And so they weren't going to do anything about that, which is sad because they could make a difference.
But First Amendment is exactly what much of this is all about. I mean, I won the first anti-SLAPP case, my wife and I, in California. We were terrorized by a contractor that didn't realize what he was up against. So we petitioned the contractor's licensing board, and he filed a lawsuit against us. Well, We ended up with, I think, the best attorneys in California, and we won the first anti-SLAPP suit on the basis of the right to petition, which most people like me think it goes back to the Magna Carta. And actually, that's one of the beauties of going through the Office of Administrative Hearing process, which is that you're not filing a judicial action. You're exercising your right to petition government. And I've warned these attorneys that have threatened me with legal action because I have the temerity to do this, that, look, you know, you're on new ground. You better go back and read your constitution. But they do that by default. They've forgotten or they choose not to read the constitution. And I think there's a number of cases, and in this case I was referring to with the ACLU is First Amendment. It's right to demonstrate. But if we can persuade them to find some cases that have got First Amendment aspect, and also convince them that, you know, homeowners associations are de facto different levels of government, I don't see why they wouldn't take some of these cases on.
They have in New Jersey. They have participated in New Jersey. So it depends. They can do it, but each group, each chapter, each locality is going to be a little different. So, but John, we're out of time. I really loved having you on. I hope you'll come back and keep us posted on what you're doing.
Well, again, I just, for people who want to sit with their iPhone, wherever they're accessing their iPhone, I just encourage people to go to www.arizonahoa.blogspot, and they'll at least be able to work quickly around it. It won't be time-consuming, and they don't have to appear visibly. When they sign up with their email address, even I don't see it because of Google's privacy policy, so they can be assured of that. And they can watch and they can decide what they want to do. They can not get involved. They can get involved. But in this technological world, they've got all the options on their iPhone.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, John.
Okay, my pleasure.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.